soul, God, the source of all seeing. Referring to page 222 of the Richard Oakes Blue Book, Mary Baker Eddy has provided the spiritual sense of all five of the so-called senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. Mary Baker Eddy defines soul as being spiritual sense because the only substance as defined by spirit is spiritual. Therefore, our only way of identifying accurately is to be utilizing our spiritual senses. She defines on that page 222 of the Richard Oakes book, sight, spiritual discernment, hearing, spiritual understanding, feeling, divine consciousness, smell, intuition of character, and taste, relish of truth. The focus of this treatment is going to be on God, the only source of seeing. So the focus will be on the first one, which is sight, which is spiritual discernment. Whatever one views that is visible, in other words, letting what they have seen in front of them to be considered as what they are presented with, can be affected substantially if we think about the three introductory definitions to science and health. The first one is from Jesus, quoted by John in the Gospel of John, and it says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Now, what is it going to make us free from? A false sense of truth. In other words, a material sense of truth, which means that it is a lie, because material sense cannot provide truth, for it knows nothing about truth, for it is the opposite of God. So we will be free from a false sense of truth. Just as Mary Baker Eddy states in the Scientific Statement of Being, there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. That can also be defined as mortal mind. Anything that is unlike God at all would be considered matter, or there something that has no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in it. The formula is very easy to understand. It's not quite as easy to administer, but the understanding is that if we're not looking through the lens of spirit, we're not seeing the truth about whatever it is that we are viewing. We cannot tell the difference between one thing and another, meaning the true versus the false, unless we are looking through the lens of spirit. What that means is that we cannot be looking at what appears to be visible as being the truth, for what really is true is the invisible that is underlying what appears as a symbol. If we see the beauty of a rose, or the fragrance of a rose, or the beauty of a tree, or anything that is beautiful, could be a beautiful sunrise, a beautiful sunset, anything at all is only a symbol for what is underlying the truth about what we are seeing that is visible. Of course, if we're seeing something that is evil, then that is not truth at all. and it is not representing truth. Anything that is defective about vision is not truth, because God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing. Now, this is from page 587 in the glossary, and therefore it's telling us that the only real seeing is the seeing of God. God is our real vision. If we're not letting God do the seeing by seeing only perfection, then we are not letting the eyes of God be our vision. If we're not letting the eyes of God be our vision, then we're not seeing the truth about whatever the topic is. If we are willing to submit to evil and therefore be tricked, then we are not willing to focus on the truth. Mary Baker Eddy, in replying to a letter from a student who was not able to solve a problem on vision, she says, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" She's telling us that it doesn't matter what comes our way in the way of a false representation of truth, we need to be able to stick to the truth. Mary Baker Eddy stopped a dozen times a day, or basically she said every hour, to make sure that her vision about everything and everyone was perfect. She only wanted to look for the truth. She only wanted to look for the perfection. And if she didn't see that she was focusing on the perfection, she changed her vision so that she would be looking at the perfection. And she said when she did this, she could heal anything instantaneously. Now, we can heal our own vision instantaneously if we will always look for the truth. We don't want to look for life, truth, and intelligence in matter. We want to look for life, truth, and intelligence in spirit, in truth, in the reality of the real seeing of God. The second quote at the beginning of the textbook by Shakespeare makes it very clear that we have a choice whenever we look at anything. And our choice is, what are we going to be viewing? How are we going to be seeing what it is that we're faced with? Are we going to be looking at the spiritual or the material? Shakespeare tells us, no matter what it is we're looking at, we have the option of deciding how we're going to view it. If we view it from a spiritual standpoint, then we're going to be putting a spiritual image into our consciousness. If we view it from a material standpoint, then we're going to be putting in something that is not godlike. And if we do that, we're going to be in a state of confusion, because we want to make sure we keep our consciousness pure and clean and spiritual and perfect. We cannot have any imperfection in our consciousness if we're going to be seeing what God sees. God is all-seeing, and God can only see what God is. Just like a sculptorist or a painter, they cannot paint something or sculpture something that is unlike what is in their thought. Therefore, if they want to do a perfect sculpture or a perfect scenery, they have to have in thought a perfect model. If they have a perfect model, then they will be able to project that perfect model to whatever it is they're looking at. And they'll be able to constantly refer back and forth to that perfect model that is in thought, so that their result of their work is going to be perfection. It's going to be the perfect model that they have formed in thought. The third quote at the beginning of the textbook is by Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." The Bible tells us we should pray without ceasing. The way we can do that is by living our prayer. And our prayer should be a prayer that outlines the qualities of God, so that all thought, speech, and action is going to be expressing those seven perfect synonymous terms for God. Mind, of course, is our facility that is mental. Anything mental is a part of mind. Anything that has to do with substance is a part of spirit. Anything that is a part of identification of anything is going to be soul. Anything that has to do with principle or structure or system is going to be a part of principle. Anything to do with living the qualities of God is going to be life. Anything that has to do with staying on track and making sure that we are following the path of Christ Jesus, in other words, letting the mind which was in Christ Jesus be our mind, then that is truth. And love, of course, is a combination of everything that has already been discussed, because love brings fulfillment. And we can only receive fulfillment if we have perfect mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. So if we are nurturing those qualities so that we will be reflecting the qualities of God, then we will be able to bring to fulfillment, to completeness, to wholeness in our consciousness exactly what God has created, which is perfection. Now, we can see the perfect image if we look for the perfection of God. So it would behoove us to do what Mary Baker Eddy did, and that is to stop every hour of the day to make sure that what we are thinking about, what we're seeing, what we're talking about, what we're doing, all has to do with what God is and what God represents. In other words, the manifestation of God should be what we are seeing. If we're not seeing the manifestation of God, we are not seeing the truth about reality. We're seeing a lie, and we're following a lie. Jesus overthrew the tables of the money changers, people that were trying to make a profit off of those that were coming to church. Church was not a function of monetary gain. It was supposed to be a sanctuary where one was going to be focusing on what is God. And when we ruin that by trying to make a profit off of church or people that are attending church, then we have our thought, our identity, in the wrong place. And we're going to be looking for failure. We're going to be bringing forth failure to our own spiritual advancement. Mary Baker Eddy says, "Infinite progression is concrete being. if we want to have infinite progression, we need to take it a step at a time, just like Isaiah tells us. Isaiah is quoted as the introductory quote to chapter 14, Recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. And it says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. The formula is easy. Whether we implement it or not is an individual demonstration. There are four operators that tell us how to operate with God. The first one is called the Word, and what that means is to know what God is. The second one is the Christ. That means that no matter what comes our way, we translate it to a spiritual viewpoint. The third one is Christianity. That means that what we know about God and how we translate it enables us to then work on the solution through living the golden rule. It gives us an opportunity to see the spiritual nature of everything that we're dealing with. And if we do that, we are going to be seeing with God's eyes, and it'll give us an opportunity to heal whatever appears to be blocking our spiritual progress. That is the goal of this prayer treatment, to be able to translate whatever comes our way so that we see the true spiritual identity. That means we're going to let God do the seeing. That means we're going to be looking for perfection, not for imperfection. We're not going to be accepting anything unlike God as being real. We want to see only the reality of what God is presenting to us as His manifestation. How much of Christ Jesus' life did He devote to helping others? In other words, did He live a life of giving or a life of taking from other people? Was He giving to others or was He taking? I don't believe there's a single example that one could ever find where He was taking from anyone. Now, He was taking from evil because He was destroying evil. But He was giving to everyone that was in need. It didn't matter whether they were blind, deaf, dumb, even dead. He was giving to them. Those that were dead, He was giving them life. Those that were blind, He was giving them vision. Those that were leprous, He was giving them good health. It doesn't matter what the problem was, He was always giving. How about Mary Baker Eddy? What did she spend her life doing? Was she taking from other people, or was she giving to all humanity? What did she do when she discovered Christian Science? Was she taking or was she giving? She's devoted her life to promoting the beauty of Christianity. She discovered the healing science that enabled Jesus to heal instantaneously. And she shared that after 432 laborious revisions of science and health. She gave her entire life to searching for the truth and to revealing and giving it in a systematic study of system of divine metaphysics. This is what she says on page 146 of Science and Health, the textbook of Christian Science. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And what does she say on page 330? 32 planks of the platform. When this is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And from page 330 to 340, she outlines in detail the 32 planks of the platform. So she tells us that she enabled the reduction of Christian Science to a system. And that enables us to heal the same way Jesus healed. And then she gives us the 32 topics that we need to master. And when we do that, we will be able to let the Spirit bear witness along with the letter, because she says we have to understand the letter and the spirit. Then we will be able to demonstrate divine metaphysics. So she tells us that she has created a formula and she has given us all of the elements that are required to learn both as a letter and the spirit, so that we can heal like Jesus healed and like Mary Baker Eddy healed and other ones such as Frederick L. Rassen. He was able to heal instantaneously. Wentworth Winslow was able to heal instantaneously. Joel Goldsmith healed instantaneously. All three of those had 15-minute appointments with their patients, and when the 15 minutes was over, the healing was complete. Mary Baker Eddy devoted her life to a life of giving. She was nurturing a life of giving in everything she did. And she did it under a great structure and system of divine principle. And it was permeated with love. She represented the daughter of God, just as Jesus represented the Son of God. We cannot look to any better source than God. When she tells us on page 587 that God is the great I am, all knowing, all seeing, all acting, all wise, all loving, and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. She is telling us a whole lot. And then she goes on just a little bit further down the page and gives us the definition of good. G-O-O-D. She defines good as being God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, and that includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. And she also includes omnipresence and omni-action. What is missing? Nothing. She has given us God up one side and down the other. It is the most comprehensive, complete definition that anyone could ever possibly define in words what God represents. If we think about what God represents and we cultivate our understanding of what those terms mean, we will be able to have experience and prove perfect vision. We will be able to prove that God is all-seeing. We do not have to depend upon any so-called set of material organs, for God is our only vision. God is the only vision. There is no other vision. There is no other source of perfect vision. There is no other source of perfect identity. We can identify everything that we need to identify perfectly if we realize that our identity capability is from God. God is all there is. There is nothing else. What do you think Mary Baker Eddy was thinking about when she stopped every hour, no matter what she was doing, to focus on making sure that she was seeing only perfection in everything and everyone? She tells us very clearly that she stopped to make sure that the only thing she was thinking about, anyone or anything, was that it was a reflection of the perfection of God. Period. That's it. No imperfection allowed. No dilution. No deflection. No interference of any kind. No stoppage. No reversal. It was always perfection. Period. That's it. Because that's the only thing God can see. Dr. Fluno wrote an article on criticism. And he tells us that criticism leads to all evil. Mary Baker Eddy obviously knew that frontwards and backwards and top to bottom. And all the way around. Because she sent him lecturing throughout the United States back when there was not much in the way of transportation except horseback and a few trains. And she sent him around the U.S. to tell the people the importance of seeing perfection. She wanted them to not only see it, but she wanted them to hear it. In other words, getting a spiritual understanding of it and to feel it, which means to have it within their consciousness, and to smell it, which means intuition of character, and to taste it, which means relish of truth. She didn't want anything less. Everyone needed to focus on the truth about everyone. And that included themselves. We cannot think of ourselves as being something less than the true, perfect reflection of God. If we do, we're going to be a failure in our healing effort. We cannot be a success in healing if we're thinking of ourselves as being flawed. That doesn't mean we think of ourselves with a personal ego. It is the opposite. It means that we have put a personal sense of ego aside and we're following the will of G-O-D. There's only one true will, and that's the will of perfection, the will of God. Not the will of anyone or anything else, but the will of God. We cannot permit ourselves to accept a single element that is less than perfect. Because if we do, we're saying God is imperfect. Because Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26, it says, "Let man be made in the image and likeness of God." And then it says, "And God made man in the image and after the likeness of God." We had to open up our consciousness. If we don't open up our consciousness to accept what God has already done, we cannot benefit from it. We cannot benefit from the truth about man unless we open our consciousness to let the truth be permeating our every element, everything within consciousness has to be pure. If it's not, we are blocking the truth about who God is, who man is, and the relationship between God and man. It's that simple. Either we're going to do it or we're not going to do it. It is an individual decision on what we are going to do with our consciousness. Are we going to let it reflect the perfection of God? Or are we going to let it be a reservoir of trash, a reservoir of imperfection, a reservoir of evil, a reservoir of a mixture of good and evil, which is evil? There can't be any mixture. God is flawless. God is spirit. Spirit is flawless. Spirit is transparent. Spirit is perfection. Spirit is reflection. It is up to us on what we're going to do with our own individual consciousness. As Shakespeare says at the beginning of Science and Health, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." what is our thinking going to be? Are we going to let God be our thinking? Bicknell Young was one of the first ones that recognized that since God is mind, and there's only one mind, that is his mind. He said, that's my mind. That's the only mind there is, so it has to be my mind. That means I can only be thinking the way God thinks, which means I get myself out of the way and I reflect the thinking of God. Period. There's no other choice. There's no other option. That is the only thinking that exists. That's the only reality that there is. It's a very easy decision, a very easy formula to understand. Doing it is an individual demonstration. As Isaiah says, and was quoted, the introductory quote to chapter 14, precept upon precept. Precept upon precept. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy says, do not try to transform your thought in one fell swoop. She says, take it a step at a time, precept upon precept. Take it a step at a time. Infinite progression is concrete being. It doesn't say infinite progression is going to be accomplished in one day. There's not one step to transforming consciousness. It is a continuous progression of striving for concrete being. Our choice is to either do it correctly or to give up. That's our choice. There are no other alternatives. It's not we can do it all at once or we decide we're not going to do it. No, that is not on the table. That is not in the cards. The only thing that is in the cards is either abide by the rules set forth by the system of divine metaphysics or to fail. When you were in school, were you a C student? A B student, an A student, an A plus student? Did you graduate first in your class? Did you go to school for 12 years and have a straight A in every topic, every subject for your whole 12 years? I know two people that were. One of my sisters had a 4.0 for 12 years. 4.0, all 12 years. We all had perfect attendance because fortunately we were born to parents that were Christian Zionists. We were exempted from taking any classes that had to do with learning about the body, learning about sickness, learning about anything that was unlike God. We were exempted from those classes. And that had a huge impact on us having perfect attendance because we did not learn about sickness. We learned from our home in studying with my mother about perfection. My dad was busy with his business. My mother is the one responsible for raising us children. I remember her taking us out there to the garden, and we had some beautiful hollyhocks. And she says, "Now here is one that is a tight bud." She says, "You cannot force it to open. If so, you're going to damage the bud, and you'll have to throw it away. It opens on its own, at its own pace." And that is how we learn about God. It has to unfold over a period of our spiritual development. And when it opens, it's going to be beautiful. But it cannot be forced. It has to unfold naturally. Remember what Isaiah said, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. I remember it as if it was yesterday, showing us the beautiful hollyhocks in various stages of unfoldment. They didn't all unfold the same day. My sisters and I, we didn't unfold at the same pace. No. We are all individual reflections of God. We all unfolded at the pace that we were ready to unfold based on our spiritual development. Just like every single one of the hollyhocks in the whole flower garden. I've never met a more spiritual individual than my own mother. She exuded with love for everyone impersonally. She just exuded with love. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter what kind of mistakes that someone else may have thought you made or that you yourself may have thought you made. My mother had one attitude toward you. And it was love. I never met anyone that had a better sense of love than my mother. My dad was a man of principle. He operated a business, had many people working for him. He operated on principle. He knew the principle of what he was doing, and he exercised it and required his men all to follow the principle. My mother was a mother of love, and she followed the principle of love. She nurtured her thought about every single individual and always thought of them as a beautiful example of an idea of God. I wish I would have appreciated at the time what she really represented, and I would have made many fewer mistakes in my life. But she was not one to preach. She was one to be the silent example. Or, like in the case of teaching us about the hollyhocks, it was a visual example of love. What a beautiful, beautiful opportunity I had. I only wish that I would have understood the value of her expression of beauty, of true love that she was giving out to the entire world. I remember having a dinner with my parents, and my sisters were older than me, and they had already grown up, and, well, at least two of them had grown up and went off to their own lives, got married and had children and so forth. And I don't know where my younger one was. She probably was with us. I don't remember offhand. But when we were having dinner with my father's, one of his suppliers, the husband made a comment about my mother. And he said, "I hope you realize the value of your wife, because I've never met anyone that was so loving in the way she talked about everyone." Now, he obviously had a good relationship with his own wife, because I don't remember her making a single statement. But he recognized how special Mother was. For all I know, my mother may have been very embarrassed. All I can tell you is that I remember succinctly how complimentary he was about my mother. I mean, they'd been doing business for a long time, and they were good friends. All I can tell you is that it wasn't only her own family that recognized what she represented, but it was other people that knew what a sweetheart she was. Where she looked at everyone based on their value as a spiritual idea of God. And she was not about to degrade them, no matter what they may have done, no matter what kind of problems they might be involved in, no matter what kind of disposition they may have been showing. She saw them as the perfect idea of God. Period. No variance. None. And I was a real devil. Huh. She probably didn't know what to do with me. But she just didn't interfere. If I got out of hand when Dad got home from work, I knew about it, because we went to the basement. And I was down there more than once. But she never administered any discipline. She gave that to Dad to do. And boy, he did it. I knew if I was going down there, I was in big trouble. But she never put out a foul word. She simply told my dad that I'd been not what she expected, and it was up to him to administer whatever discipline he saw fit. He never questioned it. If she said that, he knew I deserved it. And he administered the penalty. The ideal thing is for us to be able to administer our own penalty, for us to correct ourselves. Of course, I was 6 or 8 or 9 years old, so I wouldn't even know what a penalty self-inflicted would be. I just, you know, was a wild one. Very independent. Foolishly so. I did things that I should never have done. But I did it. And God had His hand on me. And I'm sure Mother did protective work, particularly for me. And all the things that I did, racing cars, racing motorcycles, being a real daredevil, never had an accident. The number of tickets I had, I could probably count on one hand. And yet I deserve probably 5 a day. I had radar detectors on the front and back of my cars. All kinds of things to detect cops. I was not an example of the perfect son. But somehow, God must have seen something in me because He had His hand on my shoulder and He protected me in spite of all of these things that I did that were ungodlike. And I'm sure it was my mother that was responsible for my protection. Never being hurt, never injured, never even in a car accident. Drove 200 miles an hour in cars and on my fastest motorcycle. I am not saying this to boast. I'm saying it to tell you that everyone can do better than I did. Because I was not an example to follow. And looking back on it, I can see how foolish so many things that I did were. And I could have done so much better. My parents gave me a perfect example. I did pick up the traits of my father, who was a businessman of great perseverance. And he taught me to always make sure you please your customer. He said it's the best advertising you can ever do. Just like Sam Walton. taught me the same principles. I didn't follow him in his line of business, but I never forgot that. And obviously, the love that my mother exuded must have rubbed off a little bit on me. I wished it would have rubbed off a whole lot more. I would have been more respectful of humanity instead of acting more like a wild man. It seemed like so much of my life was wasted where it could have been much more productive. But if we condemn ourselves, that doesn't do any good either. If we utilize it for making our life better now, that's good. And we all need to do that. We all need to learn from our past mistakes. I got a closet full of skeletons. Probably everyone has a few. Well, mine is packed full. Can't hardly get the door shut. And the only thing I know to do is to live a life of giving now. And I've been doing it for 10 years. I've basically devoted my life free of charge, almost 7 days a week, to developing the website, and between one and two others in the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, we've been paying out of our own pocket the entire cost of the website. We've had anywhere from one to three full-time programmers that are very experienced, all of which had master's degrees in website development. So we've devoted almost the entire cost of developing and operating the website, converting it from a regular HTML site to a full database site, which was a major, major operation and expense. But I've gained so much from doing my best to cultivate a life of giving. We give everything. I've given my whole life, almost every waking hour of my life, 7 days a week for 10 years. In fact, it may be more than 10 years now. We changed completely our home page 5 days a week. Complete new presentation with prayer treatments, music, complete details, text of many of the key points, prayer treatments that are anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours long. Teach you the complete system of divine metaphysics. And we're not competing with any other website. You won't find another website like ours, but it's not because we look at other websites. We don't compete with other websites. We don't try to duplicate other websites. We don't even try to pick up any ideas from other websites. We let the ideas flow to us that seem to be the important topic of the day. we expose the evils of government. Agency after agency, we have exposed their evils. Trying not to publish any names, but only the evil that is being done. And it's amazing how the evil is duplicated the same way, day after day. They follow the same pattern. Number one, they start with deception. Whatever good that is being done, they call it a lie. Because what they are doing is they're doing the opposite of what the good is. But they try to take credit for doing good. They title everything they're doing the opposite of the truth. If there is good being done, they claim they are doing good when in fact they are doing the opposite. They are evil from beginning to end. They live on deception. If good people are doing great things, they disparage their character. They create lies. Try to convince the people that these are evil people, when in fact, they're good. They try to convince people that they are good, when in fact, they're rotten to the core. Thousands have been arrested and sent to Gitmo, which is the military tribunal system. Thousands. In fact, tens of thousands have been arrested. One day alone, there was 950 doctors that were responsible for the pandemic. One day. 950 doctors, corrupt from beginning to end, lie, lie, lie. They were all getting paid by Big Pharma. We caught them. Cyber Command did a bank analysis. They were all getting millions of dollars paid by Big Pharma. Politicians. Probably 95% of the politicians are bribed. Treason. Supreme Court justices sent to Gitmo for treason. Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State. Many of the very top people from the previous administration have been arrested and have been given a trial, found guilty of treason, and they said their final goodbyes. Entire corrupt families have been exposed, sent to Gitmo for treason, or to Camp Blaz, which is the one out there in the Pacific in Guam. Tens of thousands have been arrested. And they have another 300,000 that they have indicted, that the indictments are sealed because they don't have any place to put them. A lot is being done to open the eyes. We have to let God do the seeing. We have to expose the evil. Jesus was not kind to evil. He overthrew the tables of the money changers. When he saw evil, he said, "Get behind me, Satan." He never accepted evil as being real. He never accepted evil and let it off the hook. He never forgave evil. Never. Never, ever, ever. He always exposed the evil. But he was the Good Samaritan. He always walked to where the trouble was to help somebody solve their problem. He was the ultimate Good Samaritan, as was Mary Baker Eddy. Mary Baker Eddy went shopping for chairs with her number one student, Laura Sargent. And when they got there, Mary Baker Eddy saw that the man had a big problem that was visible, apparently on his face. I don't know, some kind of a big growth or something. She immediately switched her thinking from buying chairs to healing the man. And she was not even involved in the conversation about the chairs. And when Laura got done, she says, "Why did you not get involved in the conversation?" Mary Baker Eddy said, "Did you see that man? He had a need. And that's what I tended to." So Mary Baker Eddy was busy healing while Laura was busy buying chairs. Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students, "When you're walking along the street and you see a stray dog or you see an accident or you see someone in need in a wheelchair or whatever," she said, "what do? He didn't know how to answer. She said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" Then he realized what he should have been thinking about, what he should have been doing with his thought. And he said, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist." Are we a Christian Scientist? What do you think would happen if there was an accident? And everybody that observed that accident turned their thought to God, knowing that there are no accidents in divine mind, and that God's ideas are taken care of all the time, that love was surrounding every individual that seemed to be involved in that accident, that the protection of divine love was shielding everyone from injury or death or inconvenience. What do you think would happen? They would all jump up, be totally healed, and go about their business. That's exactly what would happen. Do we do it? Do we do it? Are we cultivating a life of giving? Or are we just a C student? Are we just a sheep that follows along with the crowd and does nothing when there is a need? Is that who we are? The Bible says we should tithe, and tithe means a tenth part. Are we a sheep? I doubt it. We have thousands and thousands of people that visit our website. How many people give money to help pay for what they get for free? Almost no one. Almost no one. Everyone wants it for free. No one wants to give anything. They just want to rob the website. They want to steal from the website. I have a fellow I've known for over 20 years. He has a Christian Science website. He sells everything. He doesn't give away anything. I called him up. I said, "Do you ever go to our website?" Said, "I'm there all the time." Said, "I think I've downloaded everything you've got. My wife and I are always listening to something from your website." About 2 weeks later, and he's never given anything. He's never made a single donation to the website. Not a red penny. About 2 weeks later, he called up. He said, "My wife and I are having a very difficult time. I was wondering if the Mary Baker Eddy Institute could make a donation." There you go. He was stealing. A thief. Are you a thief? Probably so. Probably so. Almost no one gives anything to the website. Almost everyone is a thief. You want to steal. You want to get something for nothing. Chances are you're not getting anything from the website of value. You're not having any healing. You're not having any improvement in your spiritual understanding. You're only tricking yourself, period. You're not even a C student. You're a failure. A failure. You're not even a D student. And you're not certainly a C student. Are you going to try to follow the path of Jesus and give everything you've got? Like the woman that had two mites that she put into church, the only way that she thought she could give to God, that equals about one penny. Two mites equal one penny. Jesus said that she gave more than everyone else. Why? She gave all she had. She gave the only thing she had. She had two mites. She gave it all. How much do you give? Probably nothing. Thousands and thousands of people visit our website. Almost no one gives anything. Period. That's it. They don't care. They just want to steal. That's up to them. We do our part. We give. We are constantly giving everything to everyone. I don't think you'll find another website that changes their entire home page 5 days a week with complete prayer treatments between a half hour to 2 hours long each. We give up to 18 hours a day of our time to try to make the website as perfect as it can be. I don't know of another website that provides music. We have some of the top artists. That's our job. We're doing our work. We're giving, 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 giving. And we tell you what it takes. We have specific pages that tell you exactly how to heal everything. If you follow our instructions, you can heal anything that you have as a problem. But I'll warn you right now, our instructions include you have to change your life from a life of taking to a life of giving. You probably won't do it. You'll probably just try to get everything for free, like most people. First thing they look for is what's free. What can I get for nothing? What can I steal? Never mind if you were the one putting your time and your money into giving everything to the world. Now that's beside the point. That's not important. You want to know what you can get for nothing. You want to know what you can steal. That's your problem. It's not our problem. We're doing our part. We are giving, giving, giving. And we benefit from it hugely because that's what we're doing. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're following the Christ. We're following Mary Baker Eddy. We're following Frederick L. Rawson and Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith and Robert C. Putnam and Bliss Knapp. What did Bliss Knapp do? Bliss Knapp gave, gave, gave. He spent his whole life giving. And how much was he worth when he passed on in 1958? He was worth $400 million. How much time did he spend on his investments? Nothing. He made a few investments when he was a young man, and he sat on them for his entire life. And if you would have that $400 million as of 1958, you would be one of the wealthiest men in the world, worth probably about $300 billion. Just calculate it out. 10% a year from 1958 to now. $400 million. It's easy. You can get the answer in 30 seconds on the internet. I think it came out to about $327 billion. I think it would place him like number two of the wealthiest men in the world. He bought investments that did not require any management. They just sat there for his whole life. He devoted his life to giving, 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 giving. He wrote one of the greatest books on the destiny of the Mother Church. Mary Baker Eddy raised him from when he was around 7 or 8 years old, gave him the finest education, and he devoted his whole life to giving, teaching, healing, Christian Science, his whole life. And he ended up being one of the wealthiest men in the world. Not from managing, not from devoting his life to investing, no. Devoted his life to giving, 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 giving. If you have not read Robert C. Putnam's 10 Bible lessons, you are missing out on a real jewel. Because Bliss Knapp was the teacher to Robert C. Putnam. 35 years Robert C. Putnam spent devoted to writing those 10 Bible lessons. 169 pages tells you everything you need to know about the Bible. But I warn you, that's an index. That's a summary, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of Bible references, all from the Bible, that you need to read to thoroughly understand to get the most out of the 10 Bible lessons. He covers everything. The Old Testament, the New Testament, Jesus, the second coming of the Christ. He covers the whole thing. Everything that's in the Bible he covers, from Genesis to Revelation, the whole thing. He's a genius. He's the best Bible scholar you will probably ever find next to Mary Baker Eddy. Well, I've told you what seeing is all about here in this prayer treatment. We're 75, 80 minutes long now, so I'm going to cut it off. I can't tell you how grateful I am for every single one that I've learned from the Old Testament, the New Testament, Mary Baker Eddy, these top students that I told you about. And if you click on the link at the bottom of the homepage, there is a section called Foundation for Every Treatment, and there's a link that is titled Featured Topics and Authors. And if you click on that, it will take you to a very special page that tells you so much wonderful information about how to heal everything and so many other topics. If you just want to be a C student or a D student or a failure, you don't need the Mary Baker Eddy Institute website. Don't even waste your time going to our website, because it's for people that want to move ahead. It's for people that want to cultivate a life of giving. It's for people that want to be successful with their healing. It's for people that want to be following the mind of Christ, as it says in the sixth important point on page 497 of Science and Health, otherwise titled The Tenets. She calls it the tenets or important points of Christian Science. The number one is, take the inspired word of the Bible as the sufficient guide to eternal life. And number six, let that mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Do unto others as you would do unto them, and to be justiful, mercy, and pure. The golden rule. Christian Science is the golden rule. Living the golden rule. You don't want to live the golden rule. You want to be a taker. When you decide you want to be living the golden rule, then you will want to be cultivating being a giver. You can't live the golden rule unless you're living a life of giving. I'm grateful for everyone that I've learned anything from whatsoever. I've read, torn things apart. We tell you how to read. We teach you how to improve your spiritual understanding from step by step. We tell you the whole thing, everything you need to know. You probably won't do it because you want something for free. You want everything for free. You won't get anything. You won't get anything. You won't get healing. You won't get spiritual advancement until you decide you want to live the life of Mary Baker Eddy and Christ Jesus and Frederick L. Rawson and Wentworth Winslow and Robert C. Putnam and you know, all of these other people that have been mentioned. We've given you the top people. People that had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith, was called to go to the Benevolent Association, which is a Christian Science home for nursing home. And somebody had a problem there. It was contagious. I don't know, probably the flu or something like that. He walked in there and the receptionist said, "You don't want to go in there." He said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, we've got, I don't know what it was, 100 or 200 people, and they're all sick. They all have the same problem and it's contagious. You go in there and you're going to get it." He laughed at her. He said, "Well, that's only one problem. You don't have 200 problems. You have one problem. He sat down in the reception area, and in 15 minutes, the whole building was healed. The whole building. The whole building was healed. He saw it as one problem. He healed everyone in 15 minutes. They started walking out there and saying, well, what happened? What's going on here? Everybody's healed. Joe Goldsmith. Wonderful man. Very advanced in his spiritual development. He was a man of giving. He wasn't interested in money. He was interested in giving. He was interested in healing. He was interested in his spiritual advancement. I'm going to close with a Diapason of Heaven, which is a short treatment. Mary Baker Eddy wrote it for each one of the seven terms for God. And this has been on soul, which is seeing spiritually. And so I'm going to read the one for soul. Diapason of Heaven for Soul by Mary Baker Eddy. We must hold soul in consciousness only as a sacred name for God. We have to rise above the belief that soul is an invisible personality residing in a fleshly form with a personal identity. Soul must be recognized as a name for God, and a name by which God is to be worshipped. We have to take the interpretation of soul as a personality out of subjective thought and replace it with the true sense. We should declare often, there is only one soul, and that is my infinite, incorporeal, supreme God. Soul is my God, and my God is soul. Amen.